This is Carl Thomas, and you're listening to the Tomorrow's Leaders podcast. And with me today is another rising star, Jack.
Hi, Carl.
Who are you, what do you do?
Good question. I'm the founder of a small studio called the Future Places Studio. We're essentially a research and design studio that works predominantly, but not solely, with the property sector. We deliver a range of different projects, but generally speaking, we're looking at how we can work with organisations to think about what the future is. And that might be thinking about the future of a specific location or the future of a specific theme, e.g. the future of work, the future of retail, the future of mobility, etc.
What is the future?
Well,
in a nutshell.
It's still to be answered. I can't gaze into my crystal ball and give you that answer. What we try and do is anchor an organisation around a particular conversation. So, for example, if you're a developer doing a big development project in a location, it's pretty key that you start to try and understand that area and really think through what the future of that area might be. And to enable you to do that, you need to spend a lot of time with the people who are located there already. So we do a lot of primary research by going in and speaking to people, and then that primary research will then form a part of a strategy piece which we present back to an organisation. The key thing that we try and do with all of our work is I'm very design-led in everything that I do. So lovely photography, lovely graphic design, you know, nice film, nice illustration, whatever it may be. So I have a team of freelance creatives that I bring in to work on our projects. And what that means is whilst the substance behind what we're creating might be quite research-led, the way we present it is very design-focused, which means that as an internal document for an organisation, I think it has a lot more weight because it's a lot more engaging. But also done well, it can also be used as an outward-facing document and can actually start forming part of a marketing collateral for an organisation.
How did you get into this whole game? So you were you studied journalism.
I studied journalism, indeed. Yeah. So, I mean, to a certain extent, I've kind of returned back to my journalism roots because the core piece of work that I do for Future Places Studio, other than being the founder, is the sort of the journalist amongst the group of us. So there's about 15 or 20 freelancers that work together under the banner of the studio. Like I say, I studied journalism. I then didn't do journalism for 10 years, and this is kind of me returning to my journalism roots. I spent a number of years working for tech startups, VC-funded tech startups, and then I worked for essentially a government body looking at innovation, and particularly innovation in cities. And that then led me into the real estate world because I was essentially thrown into a development project where an organisation was looking to create an innovation hub in London. That then led to another similar project, but just of a larger scale. And then I was sort of looking at the property sector, and being someone from the outside, I thought, you know, there's a real opportunity here to work with the property sector to help them better get under the skin of areas. And that's really when I, like I say, I returned to my sort of journalism roots, if you like.
Do you still see yourself as an outsider in property?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I've been doing property sector projects now for probably about 4 years. And whilst my sort of learning curve has obviously been steep and I feel like I'm, you know, got a much better grasp of it and knowledge of it, I think I'll always try and see myself as a bit of an outsider. And I think that's important to the work that we do because I think it brings a little bit of freshness, and also it means that we're, you know, willing to ask the questions which maybe we shouldn't ask. And also because we don't just work with the property sector, it means that there's kind of constantly a mix of sources and inspiration that we can draw on for each of our projects.
So what's it like being in property as a bit of an outsider? Do people take you seriously?
Well, I mean, they pretend they take me seriously, whether they do or not, you'll have to ask them. So I think it was quite interesting when I first started to attend meetings with the real estate sector. Very rarely would I dress in a suit, if ever. And I think that was the first big difference, that there was, you know, some northern guy coming in a pair of jeans and a pair of Converse. So whether or not they took me seriously at that point, I'm not so sure. But I actually think that when I started to get involved in the property sector, it was beginning to go through a little bit of a change, where it was maybe starting to look at itself and say, you know, we need sort of fresh impetus, we need to attract kind of new and young blood, we need people with more of a design focus, we need people who are maybe a little bit more tapped into what's happening, you know, out there in the real world, if you like. Now, whether I am all of those things is kind of questionable, but what I am and what people like me are is, you know, someone that just brings a slightly different perspective, I think. And like I say, you know, that enables you to just ask questions which maybe traditionally wouldn't be asked.
So what's property getting wrong that it needs to fix?
It's a good question, and I think that's something that I've obviously spent a lot of time thinking about over the last couple of years. And I think my opinion of the property sector has changed over the last 3 or 4 years, and to a large extent my opinion of the property sector has, you know, vastly improved over the last 3 or 4 years. I think there's a lot of organisation within the real estate world, and predominantly speaking my work is either with developers or with architects. They're the kind of the main people that we do projects with, and I think there's a lot of, you know, really, really good developers out there doing some really interesting projects. I think what they're getting wrong at the moment is what, you know, a lot of big cities are getting wrong, which is obviously around affordability. But that's not something that developers can answer alone. You know, it needs a much more joined up and holistic approach to answer that question. And I think maybe what developers could do is take maybe a few more risks than maybe they're traditionally been willing to do. But I spend a lot of time talking to some, you know, very senior people at some interesting developers, and you know, these kind of, you know, men and women are very focused on doing some very interesting stuff in London, and I think those developers that are willing to take maybe a few more risks, maybe are a bit more willing to sort of change the traditional norms of the way the development sector have operated over the years, I think ultimately will be the ones that are the most successful.
Yeah, I suppose there's the risk of risk. I suppose a lot of developers might not be willing to entertain that thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you an example. So I'm doing a piece of work at the moment, which is primarily a research piece into knowledge clusters in London, the knowledge economy in London, and looking at how these areas that we call sort of innovation districts or knowledge clusters are evolving. So in London, that's sort of with reference to areas like King's Cross, over in White City, Stratford, and really asking, you know, what next for these locations. Now, within the centre of those locations are institutes such as Imperial College London or UCL or King's, you know, really strong universities. And what that means is that there's some really fascinating organisations which naturally gravitate to those areas to be aligned to the universities. And also what's coming out of the universities are some really interesting spin-outs. Now, the sectors of which those spin-outs and organisations are coming from are increasingly from life science-based organisations. Now, life science-based organisations need lab space to be able to do what they do. And lab space is something that traditionally the London real estate sector has ignored. Now, what developers in London are looking at in these locations is, do we start providing lab space for these type of organisations? It's difficult because it's expensive to do, it's quite risky, it's very expensive to fit out, and it's not clear at the moment just what the demand looks like. Now, if you kind of couple that with the fact that developers can do an office in a similar location, they can probably get a higher rent, and they can probably fill it, you know, up much quicker than they would if they were to do lab space. So, you know, why would you ever entertain doing lab space? From my point of view, I think that developers will start doing this and they will start to take the risk, because these are the sectors of the future, the industries of the future. And therefore, whether it's in 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time, or, you know, whatever it may be, London, if it's to kind of compete amongst other cities across the world, you know, will have to have a really strong science and technology base. And that science and technology base will have to be located somewhere. You want to be the developer that they come to because you were the ones that started doing it in the first place. the first developer that does it is going to be taking a big risk, but I think ultimately they will win out eventually. So I suppose that's what I mean by, you know, taking a risk.
Mm-hmm. What inspires you?
It's a good question. I mean, we've got a sort of a little tagline for a lot of the work that we do, which is for the interesting and interested. And I suppose that's what inspires me. What inspires me is, you know, finding interesting and interested people, hearing about what they do, hearing about how they do it. I get to meet and interview an awful lot of people for the different projects that we deliver. And I think that's probably the thing which inspires me the most. You know, when I'm really kind of at my optimum when it comes to doing my work, it's when I've just come off the back of meeting someone very interesting and I'm kind of like buzzing with ideas after the back of that conversation.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's why I do it. It's just great to talk to people who are enthusiastic about what they do.
Absolutely. And also I think if you're willing to give someone, anyone, time, you will find something, you know, really interesting about them. Mm. I've been doing a project recently for a tech company, so it's, you know, not related to the property sector, and I had to go and spend a bit of time in Milan, and one of the companies that I was meeting and interviewing were a refrigeration company. They, you know, they make and distribute parts for fridges. I mean, not the most glamorous of companies, but I had an hour with their founder and MD, and it was, you know, one of the most fascinating and interesting conversations I've had, because he had such, you know, interesting domain expertise that, you know, you couldn't help but learn something from him.
Mm. What's the interesting thing about you?
Well, I'm generally an oversharer, so I could easily overshare far too much stuff.
Go
at the
for
moment.
It.
I'm not sure if there is anything overly interesting. I suppose one thing which is quite interesting is the fact that I say that I'm a journalist, but also as a journalist, I've struggled badly with dyslexia over the years. So as a kid, I was, you know, relatively badly sort of dyslexic, which was always a challenge at school. And it's something which I think I've pretty much overcome now, but still every so often will trip me up. So I think if I was to try and find something of interest about me, it would probably be that.
You were the dyslexic journalist.
Exactly, yeah. I'm not sure there's many of them.
Mm. As a rising star, there's a lot of pressure on you because you have the word star in your name. Now, what is your favorite constellation in the night sky?
That is a great question. I think I only can recognize one constellation, and that's the one that everyone can recognize. And I don't
Which
even
one's
think
that?
I know what it's called. Possibly looks like a chair. I mean, obviously, that's not a constellation.
Like a plow or a
yeah the plow the yeah, plow yeah. the plow yeah that's my favorite constellation. Mm, absolutely.
I don't know any, so that's why I'm asking. I'm just on a fact-finding mission, really.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a piece of knowledge that I would like to be able to impress people with, particularly impress my daughter when looking up at the stars. I mean, she's 5 now, so I feel like I can still make them up and say, yeah, you know, that is the constellation of the rugby ball, and she pretty much believes me, but it won't be long until she's figuring it out.
Yeah. Well, for Christmas, get yourself a joint Christmas present.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And what's the aspiration?
Work, life?
Both. Where do you see yourself in 10 years in a corner of Surrey? What would make you very happy there?
I think my aspiration from a work point of view is to carry on doing what we're doing, but more of it and better. So I, as I mentioned, I don't deliver any of the projects that we do on my own. There's always a team of people that I bring in. My ambition really is to grow that team of people. At the moment, we're about 15 or 20 freelancers. You know, I don't see any reason why that can't be 50 to 100, and that those freelancers can't be spread across, you know, different continents. You know, already we've got people doing work based in Amsterdam or in Bogota or in Spain. And I think that the way that the future of work is going is that more and more people want to work on a freelance basis, particularly around the fields of creativity, so design, photography, illustration, filmmaking, but also around the fields of research. And essentially, each of our projects, what they do is they bring together some of those creative people with some research talent. And my ambition really is to keep a very sort of lean core model. So you don't really need to have a huge amount of people operating on the payroll, but you can keep winning projects. And by doing that, you sort of grow your network of really talented freelancers that you can bring into the projects.
And personally?
Well, you know, personally, just keep fit, healthy, and happy. As everyone wants to.
Great. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Carl.